Welcome into We Got a Podcast and a special podcast today. We had a chance on Sharp and Betting in the Morning to talk to the late Marlon Briscoe. Fantastic conversation. The conversation took place in 2014 before Marlon was bestowed a statue at UNO. And you'll enjoy this conversation. Fantastic. The life of Marlon Briscoe, which we all know so well now after he passed away earlier this week. We chat with him coming up.
Yep, the high-end lineup is electrified with the widest range of electric, hybrid, and plug-in hybrid vehicles. And the market, like the 2022 Tucson plug-in hybrid. Place a priority order at Woodhouse of High End in Omaha, in-store of 144th and Giles Road, or online at WoodhouseHighEndOfOmaha.com.
Here's our chat on We Got a Podcast with the great Marlon Briscoe.
This is really a pleasure to have now, one of the rare in-person appearances by none other than Marlon Briscoe. Mr. Briscoe, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, 1968. Everything that you're doing in the football world, and you see this exhibit, and you're being part of this exhibit. What were your recollection of what was going on around you in 1968?
Well, first of all, I haven't seen the exhibit as of yet. I'm pretty excited about that. But there were so many things happening in 1968. It's unbelievable. 1968 has to probably be one of the most important year of change and reflection in this country. There were so many things happening at that year. It's unbelievable.
Marlon, it's interesting, too, because you talk about 1968, and sometimes people are real leery about revisiting the past because of the memories it can conjure up, or people can think you're stuck in the past. But for you, it was quite the motivator because it's such a telling story of triumph.
Well, you know, it was so challenging that year on all fronts for all people. Mm-hmm. You had so many things going on. Dr. King's death. You had Robert Kennedy's death. You had the Olympics with Tommy Smith raising John Carlos, raising the Black Power sign at the Olympics. Bob Gibson winning the Cy Young Award, and of course, I guess, you know, what happened to me in terms of being able to break the color barrier as a starter at that position. So, it was quite a challenge for, particularly all Black African Americans at that time. You had the Vietnam War too.
Your rookie season with the Broncos, when it was a partial campaign. Threw for 14 touchdown passes, nearly 1,600 yards, some rookie records that stand 45-plus years later. When you look back at post that season, because I think you came back to Omaha, you had some hours to finish to get your degree and had to go back out to Denver thinking you're going to be the starting quarterback, and then Lou Saban basically says no. When you look back, I mean, what was that moment like when you found out, hey, as good as you were at quarterback, me as Lou Saban's not going to allow you to remain our quarterback?
Well, first of all, I didn't envision myself being a starter because I knew Steve Tenzi was coming back. He was a starter. And, you know, but I wanted the chance to compete. That's all I asked, was a chance to compete. And whoever wins the job. But that wasn't to be. As you said, I did come back to finish up my degree. And heard through the grapevine that the Broncos were holding quarterback meetings, and I wasn't invited. They had acquired Pete Lisk from Canada. And so after I got my degree, I snuck back into Denver, went to the coaching offices and stood outside. They were having the quarterback meetings right there as I was sitting there. And the secretary, who is still there today, she I see her in when we have reunions in Denver, and you know, she always liked me, and it was like she saw a ghost when she saw me walk through that door. And I just sat down and waited for them to come out of the meetings. Well, they came out, and Coach Saban and Hunter Ennis, who was the quarterback coach at the time, and they came out with Pete Liss and Steve. And Steve and I were good friends. So he had nothing to do with this, and I never met Pete. And they couldn't look me in the eye. And so I just stood there, looked at them, and I walked out. So training camp was coming after that. And, of course, when training camp started, it was obvious that, you know, I wasn't in their plans. Now, I never, you know, pressed to be the starter, and a lot of people thought that that was the case. But I did think that what I was able to accomplish that year in 68, I should have gotten an opportunity to compete. That's all I asked. But that was not to be. And as the preseason went along, training camp went along, it was obvious that, you know, I was out of the picture. So I asked for my release so I could pursue other teams that I had played against and were successful against the previous year.
And end up when Buffalo and then Miami got a couple of Super Bowl rings out of it.
Yeah. And I often wondered if I could have quarterbacked myself to Super Bowl rings, but it ended up, you know, I think it's poetic justice because they thought I was done and buried.
Marlon, it was interesting. We were talking off air a little bit, and that's sometimes where the greatest stories happen. But I kind of want to revisit it a little bit. You said sometimes you have to stop and wake up and pinch yourself. You're very appreciative of what's going on, and you haven't seen the exhibit yet, but you're very excited about how you've overcome tragedy. I know you and Johnny were out speaking yesterday to some area kids. In a conversation we talked about last year with Richard Sherman, the NFL was going to make an attempt to police it. A very powerful word in the English language that kids today use so freely. It's the N-word that comes up in sports. During your time, in 1966 or 67, I believe, there was A Time for Burning. It was a documentary that eventually won an Oscar. You had the race riots in 69. You weren't invited to quarterback meetings in Denver. It was a word that was used to control you, to define you, to keep you at bay. How do you educate people on the power that word holds? And then how comfortable are you with it that it's used so freely in the open dialogue today, given it was such a hurtful word to overcome in your history?
You know, I campaigned against that ferociously. I worked with young people, of course, with the Boys and Girls Club and coaching in high school. And, you know, that word is just so thrown around. And I try to explain to these kids, I pull them over in a moment's notice, that we died, basically, back in the 50s and the 60s, because to eradicate that word. Because, first of all, the word doesn't, defined by the dictionary, doesn't define, race. Not defined by race. You know, it has this connotation. You look it up, and you see that race has nothing to do with the word. But it's so demeaning, that was what was thrown out there back in, pre-60s and still not today. And I try to, and I do, I preach, you know, that, you know, you can't use that word, you know, randomly because of the connotation that it has. I was on the golf course one day. I was on the driving range, and it was these two Italian kids from the golf team near the high school at which I used to coach, and they were calling each other the N-word because they hear it so frequently amongst our kids that they think they can use it. And then the kid looked, and I stared at him, and he looked at me, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir." You know, I said, you can't use that word. I mean, they hear our own kids using it, so they figure they can use it as well. So.
You've seen some serious conflict and fights and altercations happen growing up in college at the professional level over such flippant use of the word. How do you keep it from winning, from owning who you are in terms of moving forward?
Well, I think, first of all, you know, we have to reach our kids at a young age. You know, the Boys and Girls Club that I work with and for, you know, you have the kids at six years old until they're 17. if you can instill at a young age, you know, the negativity of the use of the word, because they hear it from the older kids.
And sometimes they hear it in their own home.
In their own home, exactly. And but if you can, you know, get to these kids at a younger age to embed the negative use of that word, the negative connotation of the word, maybe it'll help. But, you know, like I said, you know, you have a, you know, from age 6 to 17, and then so you got these older kids that they use it flippantly, and pretty soon, you know, it rubs off on our younger kids. But that, you know, trying to reach them at a younger age and let them know how hateful and how hurtful the N-word is basically all you can do, because the high school kids, you know, they you know, they're already chosen to use it.
Marlon Briscoe joining us live from Hardee's. We had you on right before the Super Bowl, and Russell Wilson, Super Bowl winning quarterback, and it was refreshing to hear him kind of thank you for opening the door, you and James Harris. You were the first black quarterback to start a game in the NFL. He just won a Super Bowl. In between, there was Doug Williams. What impact did that have when you saw Doug Williams with the Redskins start a game in the Super Bowl? What did that mean to you, and what did that do for you?
Oh, well, that meant all the world to me, knowing that, you know, I helped start the process in which, you know, he got an opportunity to play in the Super Bowl. See, in 1968, if I would have failed, then it would have taken a longer period of time mm-hmm. for black quarterbacks to come after me. So I was a litmus test at that point in history. And so they always wanted to use size or lack of size as a reason why they didn't give me that opportunity. By the way, me and Russell Wilson, same height. same style of play. But in 1969, James Harris and Henri Jackson, who were both 6'4", they were drafted as quarterbacks. If I would have failed, they would have been playing tight end or linebacker or some other, you know. So I take, you know, pride in the fact that I proved that a black man could think, throw, and lead at that level. And the next step was to, okay, allow, you know, black quarterbacks to be drafted as quarterbacks, not at another position like I did.
Marlon, I think part of the reason, well, there's a lot of reasons that I'd kind of admire your plight. I think, number one, the neighborhood in which you grew up in, the caliber of competition you played against, all the great athletes, kids like me that were growing up, are well indoctrinated into the Bob Gibsons, the Boozers, the Marlon Briscoes, the Johnny Rogers, the Josh Gibsons, the Bob Gibsons, even my father. When you were going through your struggles and overcoming hurdles midlife, what were the catalysts to help you get past some of those demons that you had been fighting? Was it how you were reared? Was it somebody pouring into you at that particular time? Because for you to come out of the other end and do what you're doing now, it is an unbelievable story.
Well, first of all, growing up in Omaha had a lot to do with that. You know, the highs and overcoming the lows. Well, obviously, we had a tight-knit community. You know, we had a lot of mentors. Mm. You know, don't forget Gale Sayers. We had so many mentors that made sure that we were going in the right direction. Even if those mentors were like street people, mm-hmm. they still would watch after you, hey boy, you better go on home, you know.
Right.
Yet they might have a wine bottle in their hand. But they, I'm serious, and we all had, you know, you had the Bob Roses, you had the Charlie Bryants, you had Jimmy Jules on a pool hall. You know, Joe Rodriguez, Sal Omar, on the pool hall. But we had a place to go and was not in the street. And so, you know, they provided a lot of mentorship and, you know, We took a lot. We learned a lot from these mentors. We also had ladies that were extremely important in our growing up. Miss Alice Wilson, Woodson Center. Miss Thomas and Miss Mosley, Woodson Center. Ida Gitlin, principal at Indian Hills. You know, they reinforced education and citizenship. And I tell you what, when those, we had some problem kids that would come through those doors, mm-hmm. but as soon as they came through the doors of Woodson Center, sorry, you know, because they weren't going to let you get away with stuff.
You mentioned going to the pool hall to stay out of trouble. Who was Lightning? I've heard you say, you reference a guy named Lightning that helped you guys stay out of trouble.
Yeah, Lightning was a character in epic proportions in our neighborhood in South Omaha. You know, he owns a restaurant, but you know he was after hours clubs and you know unsavory women and all this stuff. And, you know, and then he had a pimpish aura about him, you know, the Jerry curls and, you know, but, you know, he looked out, you know, he made sure that we didn't, you know, enter into his type of lifestyle, you know. And I remember I was getting ready to go to college and there was this nightclub, which was only like maybe 100 yards from my house, my apartment in the projects. And one Friday night, they took me down to the nightclub, and all of the neighborhood, you know, and the people that hung out at the nightclub were, you know, the ladies were doing all kind of things, and the guys were doing all things. They gave me $50 to go to school, $50, which was a lot of money for them,
yeah.
You know, and they pulled together to give me $50 to start my college, and that's how the neighborhood was when I grew up. So, you know, later on in life, you know, you take from that when you have problems, you look back and you say, well, all of these people had so much confidence in you. Look at you now. What would they think if they saw you now? When I was at my lowest, so. You know, my neighborhood and growing up in South Omaha, a melting pot where you, of a neighborhood wherein you got an opportunity to interact with all ethnic groups. And it boded well for me later on in life because that's what I had to do as a quarterback in the NFL. And so I never thought twice about it. I never thought about me being a black quarterback. I always thought
I
was black. You know, I was just playing the position. Not once. From Pop Warner League to junior high to high school to college, I never felt race was a factor, you know, of me playing the position. I played the position, and I was always being able to lead players, teammates of all persuasions. So when I got to the pros, it wasn't a big deal for me. Now, James Harris and, you know, Joe Gilliam, those guys, of course, they were a quarterback at traditionally black colleges. And they never played with white players. So it was a huge hurdle. And James Harris ended up being my roommate. It was a huge hurdle for them because they just never experienced.
Yeah, there's unfamiliarity on their end, right. Too, so there's some fear there.
Exactly. And I know my line at Denver, there was a fear that, you know, the white players wouldn't play for a so-called black quarterback. My line at Denver, they were all white, and three-quarters of them were from the South. Prior to going to the pros, not only had they not played with a black quarterback, they didn't play with black players, not at those schools. And once we got on the field and I proved that I could play, those white linemen would come and say, don't let them touch the magician. So, you know, that allayed the fears that, you know, white players would not play for a black quarterback. That's why they drafted those guys, James and Henry, in 69. And I'm proud to say I was a part of that process.
You were part of 1968. Can we keep you for another segment?
Sure.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You've worked hard for what you have, your money, your assets, your 401k, and home. Isn't it all worth protecting? Nearly one in four consumers have been a victim of identity theft. LifeLock Ultimate Plus helps protect your finances with up to $3 million in reimbursement. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you might miss. And if your identity is stolen, your dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. Let LifeLock help protect what you've worked so hard for. Save 25% off your first year on LifeLock Ultimate Plus at LifeLock.com/aware. Terms apply.
Welcome back in. Time for more with our chat with Marlon Briscoe on We Got a Podcast, brought to you by Woodhouse Auto Family.
We talked about some of the things that went on here in Omaha. In sports, you also had Lou Alcindor and UCLA. The dynasty was going on, and you also had O.J. Simpson. And Marlon, I want you to share with people, know Marlon Briscoe, Doug Williams, James Harris. There is a guy in the history of the NFL, and in 1953, there was a guy that played for the Chicago Bears named Willie Thrower. Now, I've heard you share this story, which I think is fantastic, but I want you to share with our listeners, because Willie Thrower, not many people know about, okay, playing for the Bears, and he was the first black quarterback since the reintegration of the league. But you went to Chicago to visit a friend and ended up in a place called the President's, and by chance, it's a crazy story, met Willie Thrower. Share that with our listeners.
Yeah, Jimmy Jones, who's my receiver at Denver, when we stayed close, and I went to visit, came through Chicago, called him up. He said, let's go have a beer. So he was introducing me to, you know, the bartender and the people around me. He said, yeah, this is Marlon Briscoe. He's the first black quarterback in the NFL. And so there's this older gentleman sitting next to me. He said, oh, no, you weren't. So I turned to my right, and I said, well, yes, I was. And he said, no, you weren't. I said, well, who was? He said, I was. I said, well, what's your name? I knew my history.
Yeah.
I said, well, what's your name? He said, Willie Thrower. And, man, the heart gave me. Because I knew my history. Mm-hmm. You know, and he, you know, player got hurt. George Blanda got hurt, and he went in and, you know, he played a couple of series or so. And I knew this to be true. And when we sat there and talked, I mean, for an hour, just him and I forgot Jimmy was still here. But he was a fantastic guy, and I was glad I got a chance to meet him, and very inspirational, you know, very inspirational.
Marlon, we were talking off air, and again, you could hold court all day. This is as big a deal for me as anybody that we've had on the show, especially being from Omaha. But you were talking about playing at Coons Park. And the stories for me growing up are legendary, because we used to live over off 40th and Bedford before my parents moved what was considered out west.
Yeah.
Over on 90th and Fort, right? Where you said if there were pro scouts to stop on over at Coons Park, it was the who's who in terms of Omaha athletics. What were some of those games like, and who were you playing with?
Oh, we were playing, you know, with Gale was there. We had, you know, back in the day, we had high school players from that area that were just phenomenal. And then you would leave the football court and go to the basketball court, and you got All-Americans over there playing basketball. So, you know, it was a hodgepodge of talent.
Were Dillard and those guys playing? Did you play basketball against those guys?
Who? Dillard?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, he grew up in South Omaha.
Was he the best?
Dwayne Dillard?
Yeah.
Fred Hare was the best. Dwayne, when we were coming up, we wouldn't even let him play. No, seriously, because he never took anything seriously. And he was just a gangly, moved around like a giraffe. And then one day I came home and swatting balls and dunking on people. Still had that relaxed atmosphere, personality, but. Yeah, he turned out to be a real good ball player. And we had a team in South Omaha called the Southside Ramblers. And we had Dwayne, Arthur Allen, Charles Richards, all the guys from the hood, projects. And we went over and beat the team from the north, who had all these All-Americans, Fred Hare and Joe Williams, and really had a good squad, and you know, even had Ron Boone was on that team, their team. So, you know, we had South Omaha. We were a very close community, and being from that community and growing up under that auspices was great for me in terms of spirit. In terms of wanting to excel, and even when things went wrong, I could pull back from the learning of my community and the caring, and get my life back in order.
Is it heartbreaking to you when you see kids nowadays that are so specialized, that play a sport for 6 months out of the year and that's all they do? Because for so many of you guys, what you ended up going and playing professional very well may not have even been your best sport. We hear stories about Bob Gibson and his basketball prowess, and we know he played at Creighton. I believe basketball was your best sport. There were just Johnny Rogers, a great multi-star guy, even though he ended up being a football player, where guys could do more than one thing.
Well, absolutely. And see, today, the reason why it's so specialized is because there's so much money out there available to kids, if they excel. We had the experience of being able to choose from different assets, so to speak, to find out what our niche was in terms of moving forward. Another thing, see, and I stress this to the kids, we didn't play sports to play pro. We played sports in order to get a scholarship, to get an education. It just so happens along the way, we found out, perhaps, basically around our junior year, hey, got an opportunity to go to the next level. But by that time, we had already positioned ourselves to graduate with a degree. Today, kids are one and done, mm-hmm. And they specialize in a certain area or a certain sport, because there's tremendous money out there. And so and they have to spend more time honing their skills at that particular sport than coming up as a multi-talented athlete.
Are we getting closer, as we wrap it up with Marlon Brisker, are we getting closer to the release of The Magician, the movie about you?
I believe we are. Right now, it's just a matter of the NFL signing off on it, supporting the movie. And once that happens, there have been some more players in that arena that have joined forces with the project. But right now, getting the blessing from the NFL is paramount to having the project completed.
And you have to tell the full story, and they have to be willing to reveal some things on their end, don't they?
Yes, and basically what they want to do is have it softened to a PG-13 rating. And a lot of the graphic material, you know, that was part of my life, they want to, you know, tone it down for the sake of ratings. So.
Well, and I've heard it referenced as the 42 of pro football, the Jackie Robinson movie.
Well, I think that it's amazing that a black man could not play quarterback, you know, up until 1968. When you said, you know, I should not have been the first black star quarterback. You had Wilburn Hollis out of here from Boys Town, go to Iowa.
Oh, good call.
You know, Sandy Stevens, you know, Jimmy Ray from Michigan State. You know, all these guys were capable of playing on the next level, but they never got an opportunity at that position.
We need to do this more often, just to sit down with you. But it'll be a great event tonight. People will get to stand up with you in the celebration of the evening to kick off the 1968 exhibit. Thank you very much for stopping. I know you're a busy man when you come back to town.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hope you enjoyed this discussion with the great, the legend, Marlon Briscoe, who passed away at the age of 76 earlier this week. As always, we got a podcast that's brought to you by Woodhouse Auto Family, where right now the Hyundai lineup is electrified with the widest range of electric, hybrid, and plug-in hybrid vehicles on the market, like the 2022 Tucson Plug-in Hybrid. Place a priority order at Woodhouse Hyundai of Omaha in-store off 144th and Giles Road or online at woodhousehyundaiofomaha.com. Big thanks to Damon. I'm Gary, Shane as well. We got a podcast every Friday right here on 1620 The Zone.